The Prelude, an epic poem, a renovated spirit for holy services. Just after the preamble of the first book of the Prelude, we find Wordsworth telling his dear friend Coleridge, the guiding angel of this poetic genius, that he felt himself a renovated spirit singled out, and while taking rest in the stillness of sheltered grove on his way from Bristol to Racedown, he felt as if a higher power than fancy gave assurance of some work of glory therefore with to be begun, perhaps true there performed. Again in lines 229 to 30 we find that the greatest ambition of his life is to compose immortal words thoughtfully fitted to the orphan lyre, doubts and diffidence, and so the Prelude. This immortal verse was to be his highly cherished philosophic poem, the Recluse, and it was Coleridge who constantly encouraged him to undertake this ambitious and arduous task. But the poet is different of his powers and recoils from such an arduous task. He seeks consolation from the hope that advancing years will endow him with mature power of thinking and clearer insight to undertake and accomplish the major work of his life. Ultimately, all his mental conflicts and contradictions and his incapability to undertake the great task of composing an exalted poem on a noble theme and send the poet's mind back to those childhood days which he first amidst the most lovely sights and sounds of nature that molded his mind and manners from these very days of infancy. So to prepare himself for the major work of his life, the Recluse, Wordsworth made up his mind to compose a minor poem, the Prelude, depicting the growth of poet's minds. In this preface to the first edition of the Excursion in 1814, Wordsworth made the following remarks. The preparatory poem is biographical and conducts the history of the author's mind to the point when he was emboldened, hope that his faculties were sufficiently matured for entering upon the arduous labor which he proposed to himself. And the two works have the same kind of relation to each other. He may so express himself as the Antechapel has to a Gothic church. All that we have said so far that and the poet's words quoted above clearly point out that the Prelude derives its energy and inspiration, its dignity and its religious aura for that larger epic mission toward which it was to lead. But the irony of the situation is that the Gothic church of the poet's dream was never to be completed, and this preparatory poem, his portico and the Recluse, grew in the poet's hand into one of the noblest poems of English literature, with its 14 books, with its grand epic stature and significance. That is why Oliver Elton observes in his survey of English literature, the Prelude is laid out not unlike an epic with episode and vicissitudes and a climax. In 14 books, it is skillfully ordered for his purpose. For it begins at the end, the poet at the age of 29 is now safe in heaven and relates long past ways of the soul and imagination. Important features of epic poems. Now let us take up some of the important features of epic poems. We know that the Iliad and the Odyssey by Homer are the shining examples of this genre in European literature. We can have a clear idea about the main features of characteristics of an epic poem, epic, from these two great books. An epic is a long tale in verse. Great national heroes are generally its principal characters whose daring exploits and well-known adventures are narrated in lofty verse. There may be a number of digressions and different episodes, but the unity is maintained as the central figure of the hero always stands supreme. And the gods are always there to protect the heroes in great moments of crisis. So supernatural elements have often important roles to play. And then as the action and exploits of the hero are noble and sublime, so the diction and style of the epic must be sublime and dignified. Epic of one man's personal history. Before going into details, let us take up another important point. We know that Milton was Wordsworth's poet's hero, and it was but natural for dedicated spirit, ill signing greatly, to take his epic task with his high seriousness. It was Milton who first widened the nature and scope of the subject of the epic poem. He wrote an epic about man's moral rather than his military history. Wordsworth in turn claims to find heroic argument in man's, and indeed in one man's personal history, and the following lines well clarify it. Sometimes it suits me better to invent a tale from my own heart, more near akin to my passion and habitual thoughts. Mind of the poet, the real hero. A critical and close observation will clearly reveal that in theme, style and structure, it has close resemblance with an epic poem. Of course, the theme here may be said to be the loss of the paradise of the childhood, and then in the end to regain that bliss taste through highly developed power of imagination and mystic experiences of inexplicable delight through contacts with sublime and beautiful aspects of nature. So in this modern epic, we may say that the mind of the poet is the real hero, and we get this illuminating remarks from Herbert Read on this point. The prelude has a large measure of poetic unity because it has a single hero, the poet himself. Long poem, the conflict is spiritual. Like an epic, the prelude is also a very long poem. It has as many as 14 books depicting the voyage of discovery of a noble mind and soul. There is conflict, but the conflict is internal. It is spiritual conflict. Digressions. There is also epic variety in digressions, and they include the interesting incidents of bird nesting, bird snaring, adventure with stolen boat, horse riding, boating in the lake, etc. Supernatural elements. In a way, the supernatural elements have been replaced in this poem by mystic experiences of the poet in such lines as, "Ye presence of nature in the sky and on the earth, ye visions of the hills and souls of lonely places." But it must be admitted that the mode of using the supernatural machinery in the ancient epic is conspicuous by its absence in this poem. Still, the idea of growing off, fostered alike by beauty and by fear, and contemplating with awe and a towering peak, with purpose of its own and measured motion like a living thing strode after me, illustrate the supernatural elements in the poem in a powerful way. Diction and style. As regards diction and style, the prelude is really a sublime and dignified poem. The very preamble of Book One reminds us of Miltonic style, and the long poem is full of lofty utterances of Miltonic blank verse, and there is no dearth of Homeric similes like, "Stood alone beneath the sky as if I had been born on Indian plains, and from my mother's heart had run abroad in wantonness to sport a naked savage in the thunder shower." The prelude. Is it an epic? The prelude is something unique in the literature of the world because it combines the epic power and range of poems like the Divine Comedy, Paradise Lost, with the introspective voice of the writer himself. Remarks. Very good. No, every poet is a man of feeling, and Wordsworth was a man was of that category. He intended his long poem to be a revelation of how his mind grew under the influence primarily of nature than of friends and books. His childhood, his boyhood, and his bright youth have been poetically described in the prelude. That the prelude is an autobiographical poem is not doubted. Here, with his mind naked, does Wordsworth stand before us. With hungry heart, he runs to the hills and a solitary abode of communicating with nature. He views tears and moon with joyful eyes. He avoids company in order to be alone in the midst of nature. He guide, educator, and comforter. The prelude describes all this. The poem furnishes us with such proofs from the poet's pen. But our query is the poem of the poem epical, Wordsworth, the hero of the prelude? With a man like Wordsworth, who had dedicated himself to his art, to the prelude, became an epic of which Wordsworth was the hero. The poet knew that for a poet to talk so much about himself, it might lay him upon to a charge of conceit, but he was perfectly aware also that self-examination of this kind, insincerity and humanity, can reveal to humanity the whole picture of its own glory and despair. But those who have read the prelude know there is no stretch of vanity in it not the least suspicion of the exhibitionism. Selincourt states, those who regard the mind of Wordsworth as both great in itself, essentially representative of the highest, the imaginative type of mind, well recognize its adventurous as a fit theme of epic treatment. C.H. Harford refers to the elements of epic greatness in an epic of which Wordsworth himself was hero: unity of design and epic structure. As it stands, the prelude has not merely unity of design, says Selincourt, it has something of epic structure. Unity of design lies in the single theme, the mind of Wordsworth and its gradual development. The poem opens with an outburst of joy that after years of anxiety that the poem is at last free to devote its life to its true vocation. The last word of personal concern records his gratitude for the gift which brought him that freedom. Within this frame, he places the history of his life from the seed time of infancy to those days. When he was first fully conscious that his genius was bearing fruit, the prelude is somewhat something vast. Its 14 books, from the point of view of its size, have an overwhelming effect on the minds of readers. The poet has joined him within his own self. Short analysis of the poem. Book 1 to 4th lead through an account of his early life to the first great climax to his poetic consecration, after which there is a sense of the narrative, while he reviews his life history and carries it down to the moment before the second great climax. His outgunning of his passionate interest in man, book IX, but before this, the narrative pauses once more, while in book 8, he gives a philosophic retrospect of his whole period of preparation. Book X leads up to and records the catastrophe, the destruction of his hopes for man in so far as they were identified with the French Revolution and its consequent despair of the mind. Book X and X2I give the reconciliation, his recovery from despair, the rebuilding of his hopes for man upon a sounder basis and as a consequence into poetic heritage. Thus it is the one figure of Wordsworth that remains visible through this length of the poem. Nature of the epic subject. Wordsworth was in evidence agreement with Milton on the true nature of the epic subject. Both of them repudiated military exploits. He thought that the only argument heroic indeed in the desire to bring within its confines a more spiritual conflict. From line 170 to 219 of the book 1, Wordsworth narrates the list of military subjects of his great poem, but ultimately he chooses for himself his life. The subjects of their epics prove that they raise the subjects of epic poetry. They have lent a new color to epic as far as its subject is concerned. Nature and its relation to man is a noble theme for an epic poet. Sense of wonder and supernatural in the prelude. The sense of wonder and the supernatural typical of every epic are also present in the prelude. For the entire atmosphere of the poem is one of the freshness and experience remembered by a great poet thinking about his past. He describes in an almost spiritual strain the visionary experiences of his boyhood, and when he stole the boat and saw a hill coming after him, or when he intruded the bird's nest. I heard among the solitary hill low breathings coming after me and sounds of undistinguishable motion, steps almost as silent as the star of the road. What can be more full of wonder than talk to nature and hear her talk in a language which others cannot follow? And in the fourth book there is that most famous passage of this poetic ordination. My heart was full, I made no vows, but vows were then made for me, born unknown to me, was given that I should be else signing greatly a dedicated spirit. Miltonic tone of the prelude. The prelude bears a distinctly Miltonic tone. Wordsworth's style is sublime as it should be in an epic poem. It was Wordsworth's avowed ambition to be the Milton of his age, not as Keats recognized. Was that ambition ill-founded, but Wordsworth himself was probably unconscious of the fact that his style had a strong Miltonic element, which only goes to prove how completely he had absorbed his master. Wordsworth is indisputably the most sublime of our poets since Milton. remarks broadly and refers to the grandeur, austerity, sublimity of Wordsworth's poetry. The Prelude is a unique specimen of his poetic grandeur, austerity and sublimity. Nothing is sublime unless it transports. Note to the uplifting power the following passages. For there's not a man that lives whose part not known his godlike hours, and feels not what an empire we inherit, and natural beings in the stains of nature. In book X2I, Wordsworth addresses his friend, if thou partake the unmeeting faith, the poets even as prophets, each with each, connected in a mighty scheme of truth, have each his own peculiar faculty. Heaven's gift, a sense that feels him to perceive objects unseen before, thou will not blame the humblest of his band who dares to hope that unto him hath also been unsufficed. An insight that in some sort he possesses, a privilege whereby a work of his proceeding from his source of untaught things, creative and enduring, may become a power like one's nature's. It's a noble thought, nobly uttered by a noble person. Mark the grandeur of the passage given below. Yet hell to you, moors, mountains, headlands, and ye hollow vales, ye long deep channels for the Atlantic voice, power of my native region, yet that sees the heart with firmer grasp, your snows and streams, ungovernable, and your terrifying winds that hold so dismay for him who trades companionless your awful solitudes. Such passages are flower beds which such poetic garden of the Prelude is made beautiful. In book 1, Wordsworth addresses his eternal spirit as the great creative intelligence who informs his entire universe. Wisdom and spirit of the universe, thou soul that art the eternity of thought, that gives to forms and images a breath and everlasting motion. Abercrombie calls the Prelude one of the greatest poems in English language, grand in scale, grand in subject, grand in execution. Wordsworth succeeds in the Prelude. Wordsworth has succeeded in his aim in the Prelude compared with Milton's epic. Wordsworth is in fact more human, though less grand, more humble, and though it is at places difficult and dull, it is more intimate, more friendly, more human. Dr. Johnson's criticism that Paradise Lost lacks in human interest cannot hold good with regard to the Prelude. In contemplation, it is as formidable as Paradise Lost. It is unique example of its kind. Wordsworth has made more of a long conventional poem than anyone else. Without the Prelude, the English language would lack its capital example of new and impressive order of poetic architecture, observes a critic. The tale thus unfolded at length, observes Hurford, is very unlike that which the ordinary public up to and beyond the close of his life imagined to have been his. It is the life story of the meditative dreamer, of no recluse, even though this was the goal which he sought through the troubled vicissitude of his first 30 years. Wordsworth, in fact, imposed, however unintentionally, a misleading and mischievous lesson about himself upon the English world, even upon his most loyal and devoted followers, when he refused to publish the Prelude until after his death. By keeping back the Prelude, as Corr has justly said, Wordsworth made the excursion his most authoritative work regarding his own temper and ideas. The Prelude is a story of life and will, not merely of meditations and theories. The purpose of the book is to show that his reflections spring from what is alive. Wordsworth's life comes out as a life of pure energy from the beginning, wakeful, alert, and self-willed. The Prelude is the modern epic. The theme of the poem, the growth of a poet's mind, is exhibited in a narrative form. It is much more than autobiography. It's a story of universal significance, of which Wordsworth's own unique experiences offered as the type. It is the story of the mind greatly conscious of its own enigma, gradually establishing its secure relationship with the world equally enigmatic. The two enigmas indeed